from Ashland, Oregon, home of the Shakespeare Festival, which we're not attending because it's not going on right now. We're just driving through. It's Paul and Jocelyn. And when I say live, I mean, you know, we're recording this so you can listen to it later at your convenience. It's more convenient this way for you.
Yeah.
Live, that kind of live.
Yeah.
Live.
Yes, live when we recorded it. We're...
Notice that was Paul and Jocelyn, not Jocelyn and Paul. That was a decision I made at the last second.
Well, you like it to be all about you anyway.
Is it that I like it or that I tolerate it?
So, we are taking another request from the Tinkering Forum at permies.com. This time, Al wrote in an interesting request. He said, I'd like to learn more about practicing permaculture in designing a plot of quarter acre or less, and how to keep it attractive enough so your neighbors would want to ask how to do this themselves rather than tar and feather you and run you out on a rail.
So we were going to do cast iron on this one. So for those of you that were like, can't wait till the next episode to hear about cast iron, you got to take it up with Jocelyn and Al. Jocelyn's like actually staying up on top of, here we are driving down the road, and she's like looking up on her BlackBerry to see what people are writing in the Tinkering Forum. So, but yeah, Al's been a good contributor, so okay, fine, we'll do that.
So if you have a request, put it at the Tinkering Forum, and check out other things on permies.com, and provide links to permies.com, right?
Oh, yeah, let's talk about the link of the day, or the link of the podcast, or whatever. In the past, I've asked you to make links to stuff as your price tag for this show. I'll take the time to make them if... You all, you know, take the time to make a link. So how much, it probably takes us about 4 hours per podcast to do all the stuff that's involved with it, an hour to record, and then all the other stuff. And so if we take 4 hours to do this, you know, can you take like a minute or two to do, you know, the other side of it? And that frees up my time to do this stuff. And so today... the thing is to talk about, I want to talk about the YouTube stuff. please make sure that you go out and subscribe to my YouTube channel. And most importantly, be my YouTube friend. YouTube's got a thing where like request to be friend or something like that. And then when you do that, that makes it so that when I put up a new video, then I say, email all my friends. And I'll say, okay, I got a new video out. And then for each video, within the first 24 hours, that's the most important part, is the first 24 hours part, go out and give it a thumbs up, and add it to your favorites, and add a comment for each of the new videos within the first 24 hours. The earlier you do it, the more it helps my evil empire. Thank you.
And Paul's evil empire is about spreading more ideas about permaculture and sustainability and homesteading, and seems to be topics that there's a large following for, and a lot of people want to get that message out even further. And videos are great snippets of ways to do that. So, doing permaculture on a quarter acre lot or less, typically your presentations are about the larger full farm ecosystem system.
I have to admit that the large scale stuff is where my passion really is. But now I've done some stuff. Like in 2006, I did some study in intentional community and lived in a few different intentional communities. And you know, that would be some podcast fodder there someday for those that are interested in traveling that path. One of them was quite urban. It was a city lot inside of Seattle, and so you know the and it was a rental. So there was like 11 of us living under one roof, the landlord, you know, wanted things to have that kind of landscapey look, which is kind of, I believe, the concern we're talking about here, where it's kind of like, well, you know, my neighbors have been trained to admire a landscaped look. You know, that look where you make nature your personal bitch. Raping nature, the raping nature look, that's what they have been trained to appreciate, and you want to not offend their delicate sensibilities. So we were able to do a fair bit of permaculture while at the same time trying to not be too offensive in that space, and it seems like I think we had really good success. So at the same time, I get invited out to a lot of people's urban or suburban gardens, and I give a lot of advice there too. I'll attempt to make a summary. I'll attempt to give tips.
Right. And so a big part of permaculture is trying to grow your own food. And so you have a preference for how people should be growing some of their food.
Well, yeah, and maybe it's fair to say that a lot of people are going to do permaculture level 1, and some people are going to go full bore and do permaculture level 10. For my personal preferences, when I go and I see somebody set up and they're not even doing raised beds, I just want to leave. I just don't want to even talk to them. It's like that's the bare minimum. A raised bed about 2 feet tall, that's like just getting started. I mean, and then of course polyculture and things like that. Now, I've got a lot of things where it's like the bare minimum what I want to even talk about. And I think having raised beds, I mean, we're talking about permaculture level 1 or 2 at least. And I just made this up, permaculture levels, like in the last 2 minutes. Yeah. Wow. While I was talking to you, I'm innovating simultaneously. It's like parallel processing.
That's like your eco level thing. It seems very similar to your Wheaton's eco scale that you've written about at Permies.
But I have scales for all kinds of things. I mean, yeah. I think a lot of things in life are not Boolean, on or off. It's going to be more accurate to be represented as a spectrum, and there's an infinite number of values in the spectrum. So the thing is that some people, I've been to a lot of places and they're saying, look, I'm doing permaculture, and it's all in rows and they're irrigating and there's no raised beds, and frankly, I don't see it at all, but they're saying it is, and what are you going to do?
Well, I see two things to talk about with the raised beds. Some people may not be aware of benefits to that may seem obvious to others. So talk a little bit about what the benefits of raised beds are, and that you'd really prefer this getting to a hugel culture level. And I know we talked a little bit about that, but start with raised beds. Why raised beds?
Okay, with raised beds, you can make sure that you have good soil. It's at least 2 feet deep. When it rains, the soil tends to be, I'll back up a step. The soil tends to be less compacted. With a raised bed, you're not walking on it. You're working around it. So that soil tends to be less compacted, it holds more air, more water. The roots will grow down faster. It's kind of like a big part of having a no-till system. There's so much more you can do with a raised bed. When it rains, because it's not so compacted, there's no puddling. The water will run through. And if there's puddling at the bottom, like inside the raised bed at the bottom where you can't really see it, then that water, when it's dry, will often wick up. And so everything gets just it's not drowning in water. It's getting lots of air. It's often getting just the right amount of water. Plus, the other, for any colder region, such as Montana, where I live, then usually a raised bed that's 2 feet tall will give you 2 weeks of extra growing season on either end of the season. So you end up with a net total of 4 weeks of extra growing season. So you're raising your stuff up above the frost, because frost kind of, it's not that frost pools, but the cold air pools and causes frost.
I remember being at a design presentation for a permaculture design course, and they had created these raised bed keyhole gardens But they had put them in on the slope in the backwards way so that they were actually catching the cold air as it would roll down the hill instead of encouraging the cold air to roll past. That was a big learning moment for me, the idea of thinking about the frost cold air like a liquid, and you need to put your raised beds not so they're catching that cold air, but so that they're encouraging it to run past.
I think when trying to think of cold air patterns, which I think is really a discussion for another day, it requires a bit of imagination. I like to think of it as like as kind of like molasses, great big oceans of molasses. It's thick, it's heavy, and it definitely runs downhill. And I think I've pointed out to you several places where we've been, like at 21 Acres over by your place, how there's a bunch of stuff not growing in an area, and I pointed out how it went downhill, and then it was kind of like a bunch of trees growing in a semicircle, and I was like, well, yeah, all the frost heads that way, and all those trees stop, but I'm gonna, the frost pools there.
Right.
Yeah.
So the other thing you talked about, when we had some previous discussions about this to get ready for this podcast, and we were talking about raised beds, and we were talking about, you mentioned starting with raised beds instead of all of a sudden building 8-foot hugel culture in your yard. So can you explain what you meant by that?
Okay, so I had the question, the original question was, is like, how do I keep my neighbors from tar and feathering me? You know, and the first thing is shoot them first before they shoot you. But there's laws against that, so that could be kind of awkward with the law and all. You know, I don't want to even get into owning guns.
You opened up a big one there, Paul. That's for the survivalist podcast, not us.
Yeah. Don't shoot your neighbors. And then if you do shoot your neighbors, don't say I said that. Now I'm saying don't do it. Okay, man, I'm glad we had this chat. This is good. This is good. Good. Let's talk about a hugel culture. So, basically, you can have a 2-foot tall raised bed and do hugel culture inside of that. And then on the third year, you won't need to water it much. I mean, you might water it every 3 weeks or so, maybe every 2 weeks. But then if you build it up to 6 feet tall, then you won't have to water it at all. And I think that's far more aligned with permaculture. I mean, we're getting closer to permaculture level 10.
But what you mentioned is you start out, what you want is an evolution, not a revolution. So you don't want to do the shock and awe with your neighbors. You kind of want to work into this. And plus, it's just a lot easier to gradually build a system than just the massive energy it takes to go from 0 to 10. Just evolution, right?
I think we need to pause the podcast for a moment because we're coming up on crazy. All right, so we had to go through inspection, it turns out. So they stopped us, they stopped all cars, and then the lady at the booth asked me if we had any fruit, and I said, is that it? You stopped me because you're hungry? And then it was awkward, but we finally got through inspection. We're good now. We're good.
You have a talent for the awkward.
Yeah. So now, if I remember correctly, we were talking about evolution versus revolution. So, of course, because we're trying to minimize the freak out factor of our neighbors.
And we don't want to forget that we're trying to show them how cool, better, and easier some permaculture methods might be.
So I want to lay a little bit of groundwork just real quick. I mean, so one is that how freaked out your neighbors are going to get is, of course, going to be relative. Some people are going to have neighbors that are going to like be totally apathetic, and some are going to be really anal retentive. And it's also quite possible that you might have your neighbor to the left is going to have pure Kentucky bluegrass and nothing else growing, and mowed to a half inch high, and clearly a chem lawn. And they're going to demand that you do exactly the same thing. And then your neighbor to the right is going to have gone with this whole Xeriscape thing of, like, they've got nothing but rocks. It's one great big gob of rocks and nothing else. And that neighbor is going to demand that you do exactly as they have done. And so you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. You got no choice. You're screwed no matter which way you go. Another scenario is that you've got neighbors that have the exact same setup, and they really don't give a damn what you do. And so there's that. Another aspect to consider is that generally most folks have like a front yard and a backyard. And in their backyard, they can really do whatever they want, walk around naked. And the neighbors are either don't care or they're not supposed to care. And if they do start to care, then, you know, you can always say, hey, I walk around naked back there, as is my right, as an American. And then, and so what are you doing? You're looking back there, you're some sort of peeping Tom, some sort of pervert. I want to call the police. I want to have them put you in jail. So really, your backyard, you should be able to do anything that you really want to do, as long as you're not, like, creating some sort of pollution source for the neighborhood or anything. And it's so we're going to focus on the front yard, and talk about that and how to not annoy your neighbors. And then later, I think we're going to, on our list that we were preparing for this podcast, talk about other ways to possibly help mitigate those issues. All right, so let's assume that your neighbors might be weird. And I'm not exactly sure what they're doing. Are they going to call the police? Are they going to call? I mean, I'm sure.
Well, speaking of, we do need to do a quick aside that if you're in a neighborhood with covenants, you are required and legally bound to follow those covenants. If you're in a homeowners association or a planned unit development, they're sometimes called, there are rules that by purchasing in that community, you have contracted to follow those rules. And if you don't, I've actually heard of cases where people have lost their home by not following the rules because the legal fees skyrocketed and they lost the case and had to sell their home to cover the legal fees. So follow your covenants, and if you don't like the covenants, work within your group to get approval to change those rules or covenants. But that's just a quick aside on one piece of the legality.
Or move to 80 acres. That's even better. I think you should move.
Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of people would agree with you, but a lot of people, we're talking about quarter acre lots, right?
Okay, all right. We'll make the best of what we got for now. All right, so one thing is that, yeah, permaculture is going to be it's going to be outside of the zone that people have been trained to like. People want this landscaped look, and that's like, oh, you have a landscaped look. You know, you have bare soil, and you have monoculture. Monoculture and bare soil, that is what we like and appreciate. You are permitted to put down mulch that is not appropriate for those plants. That's acceptable. And so, whereas permaculture is a little bit more polyculture-esque, we're going to have plants helping plants helping plants. We're going to try and take a lot of our wood and introduce it to the soil, things of that nature. So one approach is we talked about was evolution versus revolution. So rather than putting in a 6-foot-tall hugelkultur bed and planting it not only with plants people may recognize, but plants that they may not recognize as your interesting different kinds of food plants.
I just wanted to interject that I know you're a big fan of the Ruth Stout method, and she mulches. And I think with a quarter acre property, you have the possibility to physically mulch a lot more and have a less weedy look than you would on more of the larger 80 acre farm like you talk about.
Right, and so I do think that that's a big thing. With an 80 acre farm, the idea is going to be that you're going to try to not bring on too many things because it just costs more, and your attitude is going to be like you're going to have planted throughout your 80 acres, it's all in permaculture, like 100 or 200 apple trees, and if two or three apple trees are looking a little poorly, well, you know what, that's how survival of the fittest works. Those are not a fit for that land, and so let them go. On the other hand, if you're on a quarter-acre lot, you might have precisely one apple tree, and you don't want to lose 100% of your crop. So now you're going to go step away from permaculture a little bit and embrace a bit more of the master gardener approach. Like, what can I do to, you know, force this tree to stay alive? You know, that kind of mentality. But let's, I want to, before I forget, I want to talk about the evolution versus revolution thing. And that is that, so for example, I think hugelkultur is really, on small acreage, hugelkultur is awesome and brilliant and the way to go. And so let's really embrace that as a final destination, maybe 5 years down the road. And now let's say that a raised bed that's 2 feet tall is acceptable. Like your neighbors will be like, well, that's a little odd, but I'm not going to call the police about that. I'm not going to go and raise hell with somebody because I'm bored and get them to take that down. So you do a 2 foot tall raised bed, and then as the years pass, you just keep adding enough mulch, kind of like what Jocelyn was saying, that the height of the bed will go up. It'll become taller and taller as the years pass. And one of the most layers that you can add is you can you know, take some snippers and you know, whatever wood that you're trimming, just lay them on top of the bed as a mulch. And I'm a big fan of hay mulch, like, you know, like Jocelyn saying, the root stout method. Although if you're gonna get hay, make sure that you either get organic hay or that you get alfalfa. Alfalfa is a broadleaf plant, and most of the herbicides to be concerned about are broadleaf herbicides. So, therefore, yeah, alfalfa hay or organic hay. So now, as the years pass, you can get closer and closer to having a full hugelkultur bed just by adding more and more organic matter on the top. So now we're evolving to a 6 foot tall hugelkultur bed, as opposed to, you know, suddenly, boom, it's in there, and the neighbors are like, that's too radical for me to accept, and I'm going to have to raise a hissy fit.
So as you're gradually building your system, along the way, you're likely producing food, and I know you've talked about producing tomatoes, and that, you know, sometimes the proof is in the pudding, right?
That's true. I think that in your front yard, and if you're concerned about what your neighbors think, I think that it would be good to plant only those things that your neighbor's going to recognize. And because if you start planting a bunch of very interesting things, then your neighbor might get weird about that. So we're trying to minimize possible weirditude. I think it would be great to plant a tomato plant. You know, try and get yourself a tomato plant planted there that's going to end up being 8 feet tall and has 200 pounds of tomatoes. And then you share the tomatoes with your neighbors, and that's another way of mitigating any kind of issue. But if you grow something that has some sort of odd fruit that they're not sure if it's toxic or not, then they're going to, it's like, because they don't recognize it. Oh, it could be poisonous. My children might wander over there and eat that and die. Then, you know, whereas a tomato plant, they'll recognize it. They'll know what it is. They'll know that it's not poisonous. Well, actually, the leaves of a tomato plant are poisonous. But they'll seem to think it's safe. You'll have faked them out.
Right. And that's another part of, you can do a sector analysis of your site in a permaculture design system and just analyze, you know, the different visions of the community, what they see in, what you see out. You can factor in screening and noise, and that's a good part of any kind of good landscape design.
Right. So, I guess the wrap up for the hugelkultur thing is that if you add a foot each year for several years, if they were to ever complain, it's like, well, why complain? This was here last year, wasn't it? What's the complaint? What's the concern? What's the issue? And you know, why are you complaining this year, but you didn't complain last year? And so I think that's, you know, the neighbors themselves will probably not complain by that point, because, well, hopefully you'll have put tomatoes in their belly, and then they'll come to know that it's safe, and maybe even they'll think it's awesome. And I think part of the question was, is how do we do something that's really persuasive to people? And I think that, because I think the guy asking the question was asking about that. How do I convince my neighbors that permaculture is awesome? I think that if you've got a tomato plant that's like 10 feet tall and loaded with 200 pounds of tomatoes sitting out front where they can all see it, I think pretty much everybody is like wanting to know how you did it. And if you say that it involves voodoo and dancing backwards every third day, I think that they'd be into that. I think that they'd sign up. They'd be like, I'm going to do some of that too. Yeah.
Well, and there's also, at the very early stages, getting, you know, even if you don't have neighborhood covenants or things like that that you have to worry about, but there's other organizations that can be your advocates. We talked a little bit about some of those. I know in my area, our water district is really big on finding ways to have lower irrigation. You know, they do a lot of education on lawn maintenance for less irrigation and plants that require less irrigation. They even do classes. So the local water district can be an advocate.
Well, I think what they're after is that they're worried about water going into the sewage systems or the rainwater system.
Right, the storm drain. Yeah, we also have in the Seattle area a lot of concerns about stormwater runoff that's not being handled very well. So they're offering free classes on people building rain gardens to capture and filter stormwater runoff in the urban areas. And there's the backyard wildlife designation. I think that can be done even in a food producing backyard. And so then you've got an advocate for a more natural look.
Right. I think anytime you can connect up with any office and get support from them, and then when you go to do something, and if it falls within, you know, it falls close to their stuff, then if somebody were to have a complaint, it's like, hey, you know, I'm just doing what the city told me to do. You know, you're saying the city is going to come out here and beat me up, but it was the city that said to do it.
Right, right. And then the...
That's how I imagine your voice sounds. I don't know. I signed that up.
Great. Great.
And now I've pissed off somebody else.
Yes. but the two other groups I made notes about that I knew off the top of my head, there's a lot of Food Not Lawns groups, and there's a book, Food Not Lawns. There's a group in Olympia, Washington, Terra Commons. They help people convert their front lawns into gardens. And then there's also, I know Larry Santoyo in the L.A. area has a lawns to food program. And I think some of those, they may know some local resources if you connect with groups like that on how to get some advocates or information at the very least in your corner.
Yeah, basically, get support from somebody who's going to stand up for you if the neighbors start getting wonky about any of this. That's the way to go. All right, what else we got on this list?
Right. So Paul is driving. We're in California. We're heading to a permaculture homestead, actually. So that'll be exciting to see what's going on there. The other part, since Al, in his post out at the Tinkering Forum, used the word permaculture, doing permaculture on a quarter acre lot, we've been talking about food growing systems and plant systems. And permaculture is about more than just food and plants, and I think that gets lost with a lot of people who are new to permaculture. And a lot of what happens on even a quarter acre lot is people capture rainwater to use for their irrigation or even sometimes for other use. They have alternative energy or they do some eco-building. And a lot of that involves reuse and recycling. So sometimes there's junk piles. But there's this whole other aspect of permaculture that I think can be catch people at different stages and with different aesthetics.
Well, I do think that having, I mean, a lot of reuse is really great. On Permies, I know we got a lot of different stories of people who have reused a lot of really interesting things, and I love those stories. And but junk piles would be something I'd say, yeah, don't be putting any junk piles in your front yard. In fact, on any big farm, you're going to have what I always call the boneyard, where it's all the bits and bobs that you've saved from one thing or another. But that's always kind of tucked away somewhere, I think. I like the idea of not looking at the boneyard. And I do think it's going to get picked up. But I do want to try and rant a little bit about rain barrels. Maybe I'll keep it under 2 minutes. My advice about rain barrels is usually don't. Yeah. Boy, that was less than 2 minutes. Maybe I should go into it a little bit further. Fill the 2 minutes out. I think a lot of people are just like, okay, I'm going to do rain barrels, then I'm going to go and water my garden. And what I want to advocate is using other techniques such as hugelkultur. Now, I do have a big, long thing to do about replacing irrigation with permaculture, but I'm gonna wait and do that on Jack's show in a little.
Which Jack's show is the Survival Podcast.
Yeah, the Survival. He's asked me to come back a third time, and he wants that to be the issue. So I'm really out of respect for Jack. I'll wait and do that. Do it there. But I think if you're doing a really good permaculture system, you won't need any irrigation. Therefore, you don't need those rain barrels. And to me, it's like a big part of permaculture is you know, being more aligned with nature. And adding in a manufactured product like a rain barrel doesn't seem more aligned with nature. I think a better way is to reduce the need for irrigation. On the other hand, it's like if you're living in an area that's so desertified that you need drinking water or washing water, or you're just low on water and water is $10 a gallon, well, okay, now a rain barrel makes good sense. But if you've got city water and the water is freaky cheap, my concern with using city water on a garden is that it contains chlorine. You've traded one problem, the water with chlorine, with another problem with water that's coming off of a roof. And if you're in a city, it's like a lot of that water is kind of polluted. I'd wanna run it through some filters or something before doing anything with it. Everybody's like, oh, rain barrels are so awesome. I got rain barrels, therefore I'm awesome. And it's like, okay, well, you're awesome in somebody's book, like the Rain Barrel Manufacturing Incorporated. They think you're awesome. But for me, this show's about my obnoxious opinion. And my obnoxious opinion is no, you actually have negative awesome points in my book.
I think what happens sometimes with permaculture, or even people that do, we talked on a different podcast about people getting a bit dogmatic, or you were even talking about the Kemlon people, you have to do it my way, the manicured, overly green monoculture lawn, or the xeriscape people, you have to do it my way. I think sometimes we get permaculture people saying, well, I'm reusing, I'm recycling, so it's good that I have junk piles, it's good that I have this reused, weird-looking barrel for my water, whereas I think a more middle-ground approach would be, like you said, tuck the junk piles in the back, or even if you disagree with Paul and you like your rain barrels, if you're maybe screening them with a little bamboo edging or something, you know, there's ways to find middle grounds that I think are still appropriate.
You know, I've seen those food-grade barrels being used for things other than rain barrels, and I have encountered places where it's like, okay, see all these barrels? Our company, which I think was like a company that made pesto, and it's like, okay, we've got all these buckets and all these barrels, and we're just going to throw them in the dumpster. And I like the idea of using them for something else instead, and I've seen them being used in urban gardens. And it helps to create layers and levels that in some situations would be difficult to do without annoying your neighbors. And I'm not a big fan of container gardening because it doesn't seem very permaculture-esque to me. On the other hand, you know, when you're in a small space, it's like, boy, container gardening might be all you got. Oh, and this is a good point to talk about Steph Holzer's work in a more urban thing. He's got two big things that pop into my head that he thinks are just awesome for small urban spaces. And one of them he calls the sausage. And this is where he takes landscape felt and he kind of makes a sausage shape of soil inside of it. And then he kind of wraps it like pigs in a blanket or something. And so now you've got this like 8 foot tall tube of soil wrapped in landscape felt. And then he pokes holes in the felt and sticks plants in there. And now you've got something resembling a vertical garden. And he's done a variety of variations of things with this. And we've got a thread out on Permies, which I believe is about urban permaculture. And I posted pictures of one of those. And it also had pictures of a wood framed raised bed that was, I believe, about a foot and a half to 2 feet tall. And they were planting a lot of stuff in this raised bed. And then they had sticks of wood sticking straight up in it, which they had inoculated with mushroom spores. So they were going to have a very productive, very small space, which I thought was just awesome and amazing.
So this is probably a good time to wrap up and talk about the different links we have. Did I misjudge time? Let me look. No. So out of Permies, there's always more about urban homesteading, urban permaculture, as well as the full farm ecosystem and more information out there. I think we covered everything on our list about the quarter acre lot, and that again was a suggestion from the Tinkering Forum. We didn't go into too much about designing a system for the it depends area. That's the only thing we missed on our list as I'm going into wrap-up mode. Anyway, that's a whole big topic.
I mean, we covered it depends a lot, I think. I mean, basically everything, it depends.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, there's also stuff like soil. Like, what is... So as we try to... people get upset with permaculture folk because it's like they ask these vague questions, and then it's like all of our answers are vague. And it's like, well, you know, how you're going to do your raised beds depends on, like, what you think your neighbors might be annoyed by. Another one is like, well, what kind of soil are we talking about? And did you want to plant a bunch of trees out there? Or, are we talking... So it gets really complicated really fast, and there's no way we could possibly cover all scenarios. It depends, it depends, it depends.
Great. So if you have other topics you'd like for our podcast, go out to the Tinkering Forum. There's a place you can make a request. And Paul is building a community at permies.com where hopefully it's more like dealing with real people and you get to know these people. And so he's looking for people with first name, last name on the forums. And then he talked at the beginning about friending him on YouTube and what a difference that makes in getting permaculture or sustainability or self-sufficiency topics to the forefront of the YouTube stage. I think when Paul was first looking into YouTube, he was looking at the how-to section, and it was all these...
It's called how-to and style, so I started posting my stuff out there, and it's like, so when I look at the main stage for how-to and style, nearly all the videos had to be were about how to put on your makeup.
Yeah, that's not really the crowd you're looking for, is it? Or that you fit with.
So now I post almost everything under science and technology, but I'd say about half the videos now are hitting the science and technology stage, and they're only there for a day. This is what's hot today. And I'll be on, like, one time, I think the science video was on page one.
Yeah.
Yeah, that did really well.
Yeah. So the next topic will be about cast iron pans. And I think we've covered about everything on this one for today. But I think there's so much more that has been discussed. Oh, I forgot to mention the Food for a Year Forum. I thought that had some great ideas on what types of food to grow in a permaculture system, whether it's urban or more rural. There's some people who put some really great info in that thread, too. So I think...
that's a thread, not a forum. And I remember reading that because... there were a bunch of people getting really passionate, and I ended up deleting a bunch of stuff. This might be a good time to point out that the forums are, there's a lot of different philosophies, and there's a lot of different ways of looking at permaculture. And if you go and you take a permaculture design course, or you see somebody present on permaculture, or take a permaculture workshop, I would have to guess that most of the people who teach this stuff are really these amazingly awesome, connected people, really pleasant, lovely, and charming, and I'm not one of them. And so if you ask me to speak, you're going to get this flavor that might not be the flavor that you want. And my forums are kind of managed that way, too. A lot of people come and want to tell me that here's the kind of conversation that I need to allow, and then I usually delete their stuff and ban them. So what I want to end up with is a bunch of people, a place for me to express my opinion on stuff, and then a bunch of people who kind of seem to get where I'm at. They like where I'm at, or they like what I talk about, or they like this way. And so far, we're like right now, as of this podcast, we're getting about 6,000 people a day out there. So it's a big crowd, and it is the biggest permaculture site on the net.
The way you phrase that, it sounds like everybody has to agree with you. And I think that's not exactly accurate. I think the point is at the forums is to keep it on topic and discuss the topic, not flame wars and not insulting each other. So you keep it on topic, keep it more scientific and fact-based. And I think that's your strong suit, and it's not so much just about you and your opinions. A lot of people have a lot of different opinions on there, as long as they stick to the facts.
I don't think it's even that they need to stick to the facts. I think that they need to stick to their opinions.
Thank you.
And I allow everybody to have an opinion that's different than mine. No problem. That's great. But when somebody stands up and tells me what opinions I'm allowed to have, that's where I have a problem. And that's where they have to go. And so we get people coming in and they say, permaculture is this. And if you say anything else, that's not allowed. And then I usually delete that.
Okay. I just thought it was important to clarify that, because I think you are making yourself sound like more of an ogre than you are.
Oh, well, I think to those people that I've banned, I am the ogre king, and I'm okay with that.
Okay.
It's like the whole black hat, white hat thing. The guys wearing the black hats think that the guys wearing the white hats are the bad guys, you know. So it's kind of like, I embrace that, you know, they're going to be mad at me. So I'm fostering a certain kind of culture out of the forums.
Right.
And that culture is respective of other people's opinions, as opposed to, usually when people stand up and they say, you're not allowed to think that way, they usually do it in the name of hearts and flowers and rainbows. Because that's what's good for the people, is everybody has to do things my way. And it's like, that's got to go. And the other thing is that the forums are also for discussion about beyond organic and beyond GMOs. And there's some people, sometimes people want to talk about herbicides. Nope, not. You got to go find someplace else to talk about that. And then politics, I don't want any politics or religion there.
It just becomes flame wars too quickly.
Yeah, I want to move forward with permaculture, and I really believe that it's like, let's talk about the nuts and bolts of doing it. So each thread represents a nut or bolt about how do we move forward with permaculture, and I don't want to start getting into these whole things. People want to talk about philosophy and politics, and like you can't do permaculture unless you first understand this heady thing that I don't frankly understand. So I think we do great talking about, you know, hey, how do we not annoy our neighbors?
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, and how to...
Oh, city repair.
Right.
Yeah, that's a good topic for this one, is the city repair folks are doing some interesting stuff in this space. How to get along with your neighbors, how to do things more out there. And
that's a big building community, not even just building your own yard system or own permaculture system. That's the broader community.
Right. Explore that space if you want to talk about how to not piss off your neighbors while doing permaculture.
Right.
And then, you know, there's also that fella Norris down in Portland. I thought he had, like, and of course his neighbors seemed to be totally cool with what he was doing. And he's got an urban lot that's pretty big, and he's full bore permaculture all the way, trees, shrubs, everything right out the very front.
Yeah, yeah. You could even do different classes or workshops or tours. That's another way to help educate the folks on what's going on and what you're doing. We forgot about that part too. So here we were trying to wrap up. We segued into talking about different things, but I think. I think that's pretty much a wrap.
Well, if you like this sort of thing, come on out to the forums at permies.com, where we talk about urban food production, homesteading, and permaculture all the time.